Good morning, and you're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley. Just an update on the whole situation in Tuam. And we got this from Councillor Donna Killay. Just to confirm, TAI are ahead of schedule by a day and hoping to make good progress today. While traffic was slow this morning, it wasn't as bad as yesterday evening. TAI engineers will give an update to Galway County Council today, again at 2:30. And it looks like there will be improved traffic management at the roundabouts. Still noting to allow an extra 30 minutes for journeys to and from Galway, with 45 minutes extra for schools. And we'll get a call around 3:30, and we'll know a little later on in the afternoon more on that situation. Before I go to my next guest, to your comment lines very quickly, there's plenty of them coming in this morning. Traffic is moving quite well through Tuam at the moment. Another listener says, crazy neighbours from hell in the East Galway area. Dogs barking constantly day and night. They breed them and don't look after them. And another caller says, I have a disability badge from my aunt as I bring her everywhere. I contacted a local councillor and asked if a disabled parking space could be added to the post office on Eglinton Street. There isn't one there at the minute, and if I do, I would get a parking ticket. My aunt is elderly and cannot walk far. It is shocking. Another listener says, I live in Tuam and have an acquired brain injury and have a disability badge. On numerous occasions, I have rang the guards about people illegally parking, and they have advised me they cannot do anything about it unless they see it themselves. I rang them about an incident last Friday, and they still hadn't arrived after an hour. People are also parking their cars on footpaths, so I am forced onto the road. And they keep coming in this morning. This is great. I'll be flat out texting this new number. And parking on pavements is another huge problem. I honestly never realised what a problem it was for wheelchair users until I had my child and struggled to get around with a pushchair. Maybe more campaigns to highlight the debilitating problem it is. And parking on pavements destroying paths, so much so that my aunt cannot use her disability scooter as paths are too uneven. And another listener says, Loughrea is terrible for unauthorised people using blue badge spaces. There's absolutely zero enforcement. I'm a permit holder and I constantly find spaces being misused or partly blocked. And they keep coming in this morning. If you want to get your say this morning, do so to our text and WhatsApp number 086-3833-553. Now, though, I want to move on this morning because on the line is Gráinne McCabe. Gráinne, good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you doing?
I'm very well. You're joining us all the way from Fremantle in Oz, but you actually have Galway connections.
Yeah, I have. I've got loads of in Galway, the Comerfords, the Hearts, the Littles, the Gainers, you know, it's a whole mob of us.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So,
talk to me about, you're from Dublin, but talk to me about how you moved to Australia and what you're doing now.
I moved to Australia in 1988 when everybody was leaving Ireland. All the young people were leaving Ireland. Then I came back to Ireland in about 2005, and then my kids, then who'd been wandering around the world, decided they'd settle back in Perth, and so back I came with my tail between my legs to look after the grandchildren and to be part of their lives. So I've been back here in Perth now for about 13 years now. Was working away, doing grand, everything, you know, I'm a clinical social worker by trade and was working away grand, and then I started to get sick started to have difficulties with mobility, and then I got a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis, which was just not what you'd expect on a Thursday or on a Friday. It looks like I've had that for probably about 20 years undiagnosed, you know, when you look back, you know, at things. And so some people say to me, you've ended up in the wheelchair very fast. But of course, if you've had it for 20 years, you know, it isn't actually that shocking, even though it's deeply shocking to be in a wheelchair and have to rely on people for support. But, you know, there's lots of us out there who have this experience, and lots of families in Ireland and Australia and everywhere who have people who have disabilities. And of course, you know, that was one of the reasons why when I was doing a disability emergency training late last year, which is, you know, obviously disaster preparedness. And it was just after the 7th of October. And so it was really, you know, was looking at how would I get out of a situation if, you know, something catastrophic happened. And of course, the 7th of October, something catastrophic happened. And, you know, now, or, you know, in terms of what Hamas has done and what the Israeli government has done in response. Mm-hmm. And so that was sort of, you know, my first sort of going, my God, what would you do if you were disabled and living in Gaza? You know, we know that Gaza has been like an open air prison now for the last, oh, I don't know how many decades, you know, where Israel and Egypt control every single thing that goes in and out of their borders. And so, you know, there's medicine and food and, you know, all of that stuff, people moving in and out, you know, that's all been deeply controlled. So then, of course, then when the Israelis started bombing and, you know, the stories that were coming out were so deeply distressing, you know, people deciding, families deciding to shelter together. You know, like families of 60 or 70, extended families, like, you know, I could imagine all my family in Galway sheltering together on the basis that, you know, it would be better if we all got killed together and no one was left to mourn. Mm. You know, it's such, they're so deeply shocking as a human being to hear people having to take those sort of actions. Mm. Then I got this, I was, you know, going a little bit mad because over here, John, it's very different than Ireland, because in Ireland, you know, you've got, you know, various artists doing, you know, raising money for Gaza, and there's, you know, there's the talk, and, you know, people are talking about Gaza and the disproportionate reaction of Israel. And, you know, it's like, and that people are dying and women are dying and children are dying. And, you know, it's like, but over here it's silent, you know, and it's like, you know, the government is not saying anything, you know, it's like there's nothing, you know, you're not able to really talk about it to friends about what's happening, you know, in case you inadvertently offend them, and you know you might offend somebody who is, you know, they're related to, or, you know, so a very different experience over here. And I'm not saying that's everybody's experience in Australia, but yeah, it's definitely my experience. Mm. And so I found that deeply disturbing, and I suppose I found, you know, the total lack of outrage here about what was happening to the Palestinian people just so very difficult to tolerate. You know, so when I saw the UNICEF ad, I was scrolling through Facebook as you do, and I saw this ad that says, "Do a challenge for children of Gaza." And I was thinking, oh yeah, I could do that. And about 2 seconds later, I'd signed up and thought, okay, I've got indoor rowing machine, you know, those terrible exercise machines sitting in my front room. You know the way everybody has an exercise machine sitting somewhere in their house with great intentions, but mine was sitting in my front room anyway. And so I decided I would... I'd do a challenge on it. So this was just before Christmas, about the 18th of December, and I thought, okay, I'll do 20 kilometres and see if I can raise $500 before Christmas, you know, and finish on Christmas Eve, or no, sorry, not Christmas Eve, on New Year's Eve. And I thought, okay, I can do that, or I can try to do it. So anyway, so the idea was to do that. And then to also try not to have an MS flare up, you know. So that was the big thing, is to not end up so exhausted and in so much pain that, you know, it kicked into something worse than just something that get over through rest.
And how, you know, difficult was that for you, Gráinne? Because you're a full-time wheelchair user.
Yeah, yeah. So getting on and off the rower is a challenge. I can't do that by myself. And if I'm having a particularly wobbly day, then I need somebody to stay beside me. But on other days when I'm not so wobbly, I can once I'm put in it and my legs are strapped into it, then I can actually do it. I can't do it well. I can't do it fast, but I can do. And I broke it down into, you know, the smallest increments that I could do, and just kept on going. And I just thought, okay, if this is hard for me, can you imagine, you know, if I'm I can access medicine, I can access hospitals, I can access doctors, I can access a clean, safe bed. You know, this is all very easy in some ways for me because I can do that. Whereas the people at Gaza couldn't do any of that, you know. So I was thinking, I was always thinking about, okay, so this is hard for you, Gráinne, but, you know, this is an end date. They don't even have an end date. You know, they can't say next Thursday it's all going to be over. Whereas I was able to say, you know, yeah, I'm doing something hard. It's not life-threatening, but it is hard. And it's not scary, but it's hard, you know, and all of those things. So I kept on thinking of those. So I did that over Christmas. And my original goal, a friend of mine said, you know, do you think you should let people know that you have MS and, you know, that you can't stand by yourself and that, you know, you're a full-time wheelchair user? I said, oh, yeah, I'm fine to let them know that. So I did. And my in the first half an hour of the challenge, the UNICEF challenge, was I hit my goal of $500. And subsequently, I did that challenge and finished on New Year's Eve. And then I've done another challenge starting in mid-March for 10 days, over 15 kilometres. So in total, I've raised just nearly $12,500. And those donations have come from Ireland, they've come from Asia, they've come from Italy, they've come from America, you know, England, France, you know, there's people have been so incredibly generous. And obviously over here, people are now starting to be able to talk a little bit more about what's happening. But it's still not enough. It's still not enough.
The two roles, it's amazing you've managed to do that, Gráinne, given all the challenges facing you. And if people do want to donate to your UNICEF Australia's Gaza Crisis Appeal, how do they do that?
Yeah, so there's if you go into UNICEF and you search for Rowing for Gaza, and you'll find it. And I think I sent you a link too, John, didn't I?
We'll put that up on the podcast as well.
Yeah, and look, I really appreciate that, you know, money is tight and that, you know, that it's difficult to find the money, but anything helps. I just think that when the borders are opened and food is allowed to be to go in there more freely, then the food just has to be there. Just has to be there.
You worked as a clinical social worker for many years, Gráinne, and I suppose you know firsthand this type of work and the effect, the positive effect it can have on people.
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the things that, you know, when people feel that, well, first of all, when people feel that they have been either silenced or have been invisible, that experience is almost intolerable. You know, where there's something has been done wrong to them, and nobody has done anything. That's an awful experience for people to have. But when people actually start to acknowledge it and make it right, and do something to make things better, people's ability to transform incredible pain to having ordinary, not ordinary, but joyful, worthy, you know, lives that mean something, you know, that have meaning. You know, people have got great resilience, and you know, the Palestinian people have great resilience because we've seen that all over through the decades. You know, regardless of whether Gaza or West Bank or whether they're in Egypt or Lebanon, they keep on trying to hold their culture together, their families together. You know, all of that stuff. But yeah, it makes a difference. Doing something makes a difference.
And in terms of the rowing, Gráinne, will it be a case of third time lucky?
Oh, absolutely. So I was recently, recently had a procedure in hospital, and I'm not allowed to do anything now for 6 weeks, but I think I probably mid-May I'll start again.
And what's the challenge? You went from 20 to 35. Are you going to go one better again?
Yeah. I probably will. John, the thing I've learned about this is just in terms of doing it, I probably need to allow myself a little bit more time to do it, because I've always done it in short bursts, and whereas I might do a longer one over a longer time. So I'd love to do 100 kilometers, and I'd love to do that, say, over 2 months.
Brilliant. Before I let you go, Gráinne, is there anyone in Galway you'd like to say hello to?
Oh, yeah. I'd like to say hello to all my family in the Comerfords and Knocknacarra and Belclare and Headford and the Hearts and Knocknacarra and Barna. I'm thinking of you all and missing you. And I won't see you this year, but I'll see you next year.
Brilliant.
And John, it was lovely to chat with you. Thank you for that.
And you too,
I really
Gráinne.
Appreciate it.
You too. And best of luck with everything. Best of luck with the recovery from the operation, and best of luck with your third role for Gaza as well in the coming weeks and months as well. That's Gráinne McCabe and Gráinne Rose for Gaza. Again, if you want to donate to that, you can go on to the Listen Back section of our website, go into Galway Talks and go into today's podcast. We'll have the link for that up there as well. Gráinne McCabe, a pleasure, and keep safe, and thanks for joining us on Galway Talks.
Lovely. Okay, cheers. Bye-bye.
And still to come on the programme today, we're looking at a lovely conference which is taking place. It's called Minding Autistic Minds, and everyone taking part in it has some form of autism. We'll be hearing from one of the participants in that very wonderful initiative next.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Drive happy in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, with hundreds of used cars to suit your budget.
Good morning, you're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley. We're looking at this Minding Autistic Minds conference which is taking place, and I'm joined on the line by Siobhan McDonough, who is a primary school teacher who has autism, and she's speaking at the Minding Autistic Minds conference on autistic mental health. Siobhan, good morning.
Good morning, John.
Great to have you with us this morning. First of all, tell us a bit about yourself, the work you do, and I suppose living with autism.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I don't live with it. I am autistic, so it's a central part of who I am. It's totally who I am. So we prefer to say I'm autistic. So I know the language is changing, so that can be difficult for people, because that's something we would have said up to now. So I am autistic. I breathe, live, sense the world, feel the world, process the world autistically. So I'm a teacher. I'm a primary school teacher, and I found out I was autistic 3 years ago. So I suppose it brought me back on a journey to relook at how I was in the world, and how difficult the education system was for me, and going through the education system, not knowing I was autistic, sensing that things were very different for me, but not understanding why, and how that affected me. And then when I found out I was autistic myself, I suppose I really started looking at what's happening within our schools and education system at the minute. And I think it kind of shocked me to realise that a lot hadn't changed in the 47 years since I'd been in school, primary school and that. So I started doing a little bit of retraining to understand the whole idea of the autistic experience, my own experience and the experience that the children in the classroom are having, and how we can change the environment and how we view autistic people to make life so much easier for them. Because unfortunately, in a lot of cases, it is still extremely difficult to be in the school, the very busy school environment, where there is, I would say, not the most up-to-date training available to all teachers. And so therefore, that can be detrimental to a lot of people, in that the understanding of the experience perhaps just isn't there. And the danger with that is that, I suppose, historically, we've tried to change autistic people to be more neurotypical. That's just the way it was, and that's what we were told to do. But we understand now that that's damaging, and so we don't want to make autistic people neurotypical anymore. We want to have practices in place that allow them to be autistic all of the time. And that would be their communication styles, their learning styles, taking into consideration their sensory systems, whether it's difficult for them, whether they need more sensory input, etc. So I hope that made sense.
It does. And apologies for not using the right language at the beginning, no. Siobhan. But as someone who is autistic, talk about your own personal journey and how you said it was later in life that you found out.
Yeah, I suppose, as I said, I always felt a little bit on the outside looking in and wondering, how's everybody else getting this? How do they know what to do? And it always felt like somebody forgot to give me the handbook of life, and that everybody else just seemed to know innately what to do, and I didn't. And so I was always aware of that sense of copying other people to make sure that I got it right. And that was a big part of it. The sensory environment was also a big part. So I spent all my life saying, oh, I have sensory issues. I knew socializing was quite different for me. I knew all of these things felt different, but I just didn't add them up. And I think I didn't add them up as, you know, an autistic experience, because I suppose we, in general in society, have the stereotypical idea of what an autistic person looks like, and it's far from the reality. There are so many different, I don't like the word looks, but in a sense, anybody can be autistic. It's just that we have that idea in our head, so we can miss it in ourselves and so many other people. So I had a light bulb moment. Somebody spoke to me one day about sensory processing difficulties, and I thought, well, I definitely have that. Mm. And when I Googled, every single last line of every article said this can be part of an autistic profile. And I thought, wow, that's me. And it was a very, very exciting time. It was an amazing moment. I suppose it was a moment that I wished that I had have had a long, long time ago, because life starts making sense when you know how your brain works and how you process the world and perceive the world. And it is different, but it's not less, and it's not less important. It's just different, and it's just a different way of being.
And how have you changed the way you go about things since your diagnosis?
Mm-hmm. I'm very aware of my sensory profile. So I would plan ahead. I would have ear defenders or earbuds on at all times. You know, I can check environments before I go in. There are some environments I can't be in. I prepare for that. I give myself permission to opt in and out of different things that would be overwhelming and would be dysregulating. I think awareness and allowing to be part of certain parts of the world and not is just very freeing. I think within school, I think it's a huge part of it. It can be difficult being an autistic teacher in school from the whole overwhelming overload sense of it. So that has given me a massive insight on how it feels like to be an autistic child within school. So, you know, the whole idea of my personal journey and then looking at the conference that we're having tomorrow on Thursday is how can we better understand the experience of being autistic, what it's like to be in an environment that really doesn't align with how we are in the world, and how we can make changes to the environment. And that includes everything within the environment, the physical environment, the sensory environment, the people within the environment, the community, etc., and how we can make that experience a lot more bearable and even moving it further so that autistic people can thrive autistically within our systems.
Now, the conference happening tomorrow, I know it's a hybrid conference. It's taking place in the Osprey Hotel in Naas and Kildare. Day one is autistic adults and day two is autistic minors.
Yeah. So I'd be speaking day two because, I'm a primary school teacher. So we'd be looking at all things how, we're looking at, I suppose people don't tend to see, it can be really exciting. It is really exciting being autistic. You know, we can view the world with such amazing detail on it. And we tend to see that the sensory system, you know, it's all bad and it's all difficult, but it's not. We can have great joy in the world and perceive great joy in the world. So it's about removing obstacles and having that so that we can sense the world beautifully and engage with the world in our own way. And we'll be looking at lots of different ways that we can do that within the school. So it isn't just about getting rid of the bad. That's not enough. It's about how we can spread that absolute beautiful sense of joy and enjoying the world and being present in the world and how we perceive the world in such an amazing way. That whole sense of detail and passionate joys and passionate interests, that we can suppress all of that in children, and there's so much in there and just freeing that up and allowing that to come out. So that's a lot of what we will be doing and what I'll be doing on Thursday. Lots of different speakers at the conference. We'll have speech and language therapists, occupational therapists, psychotherapists, people who work with adults and children. So it's a real mix. And the we really, really hope that we'll start conversations, opportunities for people to be involved in you know, opening their minds to protect autistic young people and children's minds. And going forward, yeah, just more positive experiences and practices, just as I say, to mind our autistic minds and not have it that autistic children are and young people are anxious. But I think there is a perception perhaps that being autistic equals being anxious, but it doesn't. They don't come hand in hand. It's the unsuitable environments that create the anxiety, not being autistic. So it'd be really lovely if we could reduce a lot of that anxiety in children and young people and adults as well. But I suppose I'm particularly interested in the children's aspect.
Yeah, I just want to get it right, Siobhan. Do you actually teach an autism class?
No, I teach in mainstream, but there are autistic children in all schools. And so some children know they're autistic. Some people are yet to find out their neurotype. But the idea is that we create inclusive environments where everybody feels they belong. So it's not just about talking about a class specifically for autistic children. It's about, you know, how we, and that's a great question, because sometimes people do just think, oh, this is just about the classes for autistic children, but it's not. It's how can we do this in all settings where children are, create those environments that align with all of the neurotypes and not just one, with accommodations for children who fall outside what will be known as the typical neurotype.
You mentioned removing obstacles, Siobhan. Are there enough supports for children that have autism?
It's a good question. I think, again, there can be a misconception that being autistic means that you need therapies and supports, and not every autistic child does, the same way as some neurotypical children do and some don't. However, for those who do need those supports, no, there aren't enough supports, that we know. This is widespread across society, and no, there aren't. However, if we can have better practices within school, more affirming practices within school, we can reduce that need. I mean, if a child needs speech and language therapy, they need speech and language therapy, and the same with OT, occupational therapy. But we can make environments more movement friendly, for example. So we know in a lot of autistic children, their sensory system craves a lot of input and stimuli, so they need to move. Their bodies need to move to function, to learn. And so traditionally, we can all picture classrooms at the minute, and, you know, the desks and the tables and chairs. And so that doesn't allow for natural movement. So the more movement we can provide, the easier it is for children to learn. And it's very difficult for us to change our mindset from that, isn't it? We tend to think, oh, look, that child's sitting quietly, they're doing great learning and they're doing great listening. But really, in fact, their body's desperately craving movement so that they can engage. So if we can provide that in natural ways, then they won't crave them in ways that maybe wouldn't be seen as, you know, more accepting within a classroom setting. So we can, to a certain extent, reduce that need for all of these outside of school supports. Now, is there enough money available? That's another question, you know, budgeting, and I really understand that too. So I think we do, in all of this, need huge systemic changes from the top down, but we don't have time to wait for that, because we do know that autistic children are suffering. We do know that it can be extremely difficult, and some autistic children just can't even be in school the way it is nowadays. So we will be looking at different ways of making those, you know, what could be seen as smaller changes, but very impactful within our classrooms and our schools. And I mean, they can be simple things like reducing bells. You know, some schools have bells, 20, 30 bells a day, and that really impacts the nervous system of a child or young person who has a sensitive nervous system. And I know for people who I can see people who barely notice a bell, and yet I can take, and there's a bell.
right on time.
Right on time. And that actually is great, because I've completely lost my train of thought now, and this is what happens. And that's so beautiful. That just was placed there so beautifully. It can take my system up to 5, 6, 7 minutes to recover from that bell. I've lost my train of thought completely. And I'm so delighted that happened, because this is what's happening to kids as young as 4 and 5 in school, and their systems can't reset quickly. Mm-hmm. Apparently, neurotypical people, their system sets really quickly. And I know that because I see people who don't even flinch yet. You know, we have all of this bombardment and attack on nervous systems, and we can greatly reduce that. We can, you know, that can be done very easily. You know, if we have ear defenders and in-ear buds available at all times to children, they can pick and choose how to be safer within the sensory environment, because it's not safe when your system is being attacked all of the time and you're on high alert. And you know that fight, flight, freeze response when our body's in stress. And so we know that the thinking brain and the learning brain just shuts down when we're in that sense of watching for danger and waiting for danger all of the time. So when we can reduce that stress load, we can then obviously open up an awful lot more opportunity to learn in a much more natural and belonging setting.
Mm. And I think that bell might be your cue to go, Siobhan. But
it's my cue to go.
It was a pleasure talking to you. I'll just finish with it. It sounds like you love what you do, which is important.
I do. Mm-hmm. I love what I do. I just adore being with children and working with children. I love it even more now that I just have this extra insight into, yes, how difficult it can be, but how it doesn't need to be that difficult. And just how we can make those changes. And yeah, just trying to spread the word a little bit, and everybody benefits from this. The children themselves benefit from them, the school community, families, everybody benefits. It really, really does make life easier for everybody. And just so that we can shift from that sense of, oh, this is difficult, to, okay, what can I bring to the world? What do I have to offer? And that can be so much more out there.
Okay. It's called Minding Autistic Minds, a vital conference on autistic mental health. It's taking place tomorrow and the following day. It's a hybrid conference, and you can either attend in person or go online as well. Sign up at awesometraining.com. Siobhan McDonald, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
Thank you, John.
That was very insightful and interesting, I must say. And still to come on the programme today, we're looking at a casting call. So if you have some young, talented people in your household, you might want to keep your ears perked up for that one. And if you have a comment you want to get into us as well, do so on our text and WhatsApp line 086 38 33 553. Call reception on 091 77 0077, and email comments at goaibayfm.ie. I want to move on now to our Garda Socks. I'm joined on the line by Garda Marcus Flynn. Marcus, good morning.
Good morning, John.
Good to have you with us this morning. And we're starting with a burglary.
John, at approximately 4:20 a.m. on Wednesday the 17th of the 4th, two males were disturbed during the course of a break-in at a licensed premises in Kilkearn and Ballinasloe. These males fled via foot from the front door of the building. Gardaí of Ballinasloe are appealing for anyone who may have noticed any persons or vehicles acting suspicious to contact Ballinasloe Garda Station on 090 963 1890.
You're also investigating the theft of a pedal cycle.
Between 6 p.m. on Friday the 12th and 11:30 a.m. on Sunday the 13th of April, a white trike bike was stolen from the grounds of NUI on University Road. Anyone who may have witnessed the theft has been offered this bike for sale, or with any other information, is asked to contact Galway Garda Station on 091 538 1000 or the Garda Confidential line on 1-800-666-111.
There was also criminal damage on the Newcastle Road.
Between 10:30 p.m. on Wednesday the 17th and 3:30 a.m. Thursday the 18th of April, a pane of glass was smashed in the front door of a house on Newcastle Road in Galway. Anyone may have witnessed this incident or with any other information is again asked to contact Galway Garda Station on 538 1000.
To the county now on a theft in Gort.
Cork Gardaí are investigating the theft of a Nugent brand cattle trailer from a farmyard in Ratcosgrove in Ardrahan on the night of the 17th to 18th of April. In addition, both registration plates were removed from a Volkswagen Caddy van bearing the registration number 171G1546, from which the stolen trailer was unhooked. Anyone who may have witnessed this theft has been offered this trailer for sale, or any information is asked to contact Cork Garda Station on 091 636400.
Another theft now, and back to the university.
That's correct, John. On Thursday, the 18th of April, between 4:15 p.m. and 5:45 p.m., a HP laptop was stolen from a classroom in the Cairns building in NUIG. Anyone who may have witnessed the theft has been offered the laptop for sale or with any other information is again asked to contact Galway Garda Station on 091-538-1000 or the Garda Confidential line on 1-800-666-111.
Staying in the city, finally, and a case of attempted arson.
That's correct, John. On Thursday the 18th of April at 11:30 p.m, an attempt was made to cause damage to a house in Schleeburka on the Ballymunnine Road by ways of arson. A glass bottle containing an accelerant was thrown at the front door of the house but failed to ignite. Gardaí are appealing for anyone who may have noticed any persons or vehicles acting suspicious in the area to come forward. Also, anyone who may have CCTV on their house or possible dash cam footage is asked to make available to Gardaí at Galway Garda Station or at Saltill Garda Station on 091-514-720.
All right, Garda, Marcus Flynn, thank you for joining us on Galway Talk. Still to come before 11, do you have a boy aged 8 to 11? Because there's a casting call for a BAFTA award-winning casting company, a Des Hamilton casting, and they're looking for a lead role in their feature film for a boy aged 8 to 11, based ideally either in Galway, Cork, or the surrounding areas. That's coming up next.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway and get a free 3-year warranty on hundreds of used cars.
Good morning, you're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley. Now, a BAFTA-winning casting company for film and TV, Des Hamilton Casting, are looking for a young boy to be the lead in their new production. Their credits include the likes of the Oscar-winning film Jojo Rabbit and the Netflix series Top Boy. And they're currently working on a film called Learning to Breathe Underwater, starring Rory Kinnear and Maria Bakalova. And it'll film this summer in the Republic of Ireland, likely in Galway. And you can find out more on a number of links that we'll give to you in a short time. The lead character is a boy named Leo, and the production are looking for a young person in Ireland, ideally in Galway, to play this role. I'm delighted to say I'm joined on the line by the casting directors, Joe Harris and Des Hamilton. You're both very welcome. And Des, I'll start with you first. This is a great opportunity for any young and aspiring young men out there in the Galway area.
Oh, for sure, John. It certainly is. And we're not looking for anybody that's got any acting experience, just somebody that's kind of interested and to come along and try out. Do their best. That's all we can ask of kids at that age. Mm. We're looking for somebody between around 8 and 11 years of age, and the film will shoot around the Galway area. Mm. It's a tremendous opportunity.
And I know you'd like to hear from young people with lived experience of neurodivergence for this role as well.
Yes, yeah, definitely. That would be a bonus. Although it's not a, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, at this stage. We're looking to meet a whole range of boys of that age from the Galway area. But, yeah, any insight into neurodivergence is definitely an asset regarding this role.
Yeah, and I know that it's a boy aged between the ages of 8 and 11 years old to play the part of Leo. How strict are you in that age demographic?
I don't think we could go into teens, and I don't think we could go much below 8 years of age, just given the subject matter and, you know, the way that it's been written and the in relation to the world. I think it suits, you know, around about 9-10 years of age is a sweet spot. Then 8 and 11 would be, yeah. We want to see kids. I wouldn't want to be too strict around our birth certificate. We'd just like to see a whole bunch of kids, and hopefully one of them will come through and, you know, grab the part.
Brilliant. And the film is called Learning to Breathe Underwater. What can you tell us about it at this point in time?
I'm going to pass you to my colleague, Joe, that will tell you about the project.
Brilliant.
The themes and the film. Joe Harris.
Hiya. Hey, this is Joe.
Joe, yeah, tell us a bit about the film.
So it's about a young boy, that's Leo, that's the kid that we're casting, and the story is kind of all told through his eyes. He's a very imaginative and kind of unique kid, so his insight into the world is quite different, but it's really beautiful. It's a brilliant part. He lives with his dad, who's bringing him up. Obviously we can't say too much about the film and its storyline because some of that is confidential, but he's living with his dad after his mum has passed away many years ago. Him and his dad have a very close relationship, but he gets an au pair who moves in with them, who is Bulgarian, and she kind of opens up his and his dad's eyes to different, you know, parts of the world and to life that maybe they had been kind of not exposed to. So yeah, it's a really beautiful story, and it's about his relationship with his dad and also with this au pair, and it's told by him. So, you know, for a kid of that age, it's such a brilliant opportunity to play the lead role in something. And like we said, they don't need any previous acting experience. So just anyone who feels, you know, interested or excited by the idea of that should get in touch with us, and we'd love to consider them.
And you already have a nice cast assembled already.
Yeah, so playing the dad, we have Rory Kinnear, and playing the mum is Maria Bakalova, who of course was Oscar nominated for her role in Borat, and yeah, has worked on many other brilliant things. So yeah, we have those two leading international actors attached already. So this kid would be playing alongside both of them in all their scenes.
Mm. It sounds all very prestigious and a great opportunity for a young aspiring actor, because I know your casting company have been involved in a number of productions, as I've mentioned before, the Oscar-winning film Jojo Rabbit and the Netflix series Top Boy.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, for example, for Netflix, for that series Top Boy, we cast loads of young people by visiting schools, going to youth clubs, putting things out on social media, getting, you know, having kids get in touch with us that way. And lots of the people who went on to be cast in the series came to us through those type of routes. So, you know, applied through social media or were met by us. We also do street casting, so we met by us that way. But yeah, so in many, many cases on other projects that we've worked on, young people without any previous acting experience have gone on to land roles in quite major series or major films. Mm. So yeah,
and
that's been really exciting.
If people want to apply, Joe, how did they do that?
So the best way is to apply online. You can easily search us. So our casting company is called Des Hamilton Casting. We have an Instagram, so we put all of our flyers on there for any opportunities that are open to anyone. For this particular casting, the way to apply, there's a link, and obviously you can also find this on our Instagram, but the link is bit.ly/Leo Casting, because the kid is called Leo. So that's bit.ly/Leo Casting. But you can search Des Hamilton Casting, find our flyer, and that will be on there too if you missed that.
And when is the deadline?
So there isn't a strict deadline. They're likely to film this summer, ideally in summer holidays. So there's not a strict deadline, but if people could apply within the next 2 weeks, I think that would be brilliant. So ideally people would apply in April. But of course, yeah, there's not an exact cutoff. So if people haven't done that, we would still love to hear from them.
Brilliant. Well, Joe Harris and Des Hamilton, casting directors with Des Hamilton Casting, thank you both for joining us on Galway Talks. Still to come on the programme today, we have Trending Topics with Joshua Byrne, where we look at TikTok. There's also the No Name Club in Mountbellew. They're going to the National Youth Award Finals. And we have music from Sinead Murphy. All that coming up after news.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Find hundreds of used cars to suit your budget in Windsor Motor Mall Galway, located on the Monavay Road.